Tonight I want to talk to you about hunger and appetite in the relationship to the amount of food you eat. Not the quality of food, not the kind of food, but the quantity of food you eat. So while I'm talking, don't think of proteins and vitamins and minerals and dietary fiber and whole wheat and unrefined and that type of thing. I want you to just think about quantity of food. And I'd like to ask you a question. You don't have to answer it loud, but I'd like you to answer it for yourself. Why do you eat the amount of food that you do? Do you eat the amount of food you do because you look at the food before you and you say one serving of that has so many calories and that has so many calories, and if I put this cashew spread on the bread, it's going to make it so many calories, and well, those two tablespoons or heaping fulls of salad plus the dressing that is prepared will have so many calories, and that's enough. I don't think there's a single individual in this room who does that. Then what determines how much you put on your plate? You don't know the caloric value, and you couldn't tell me the nutrient content. There are very few people who can. Some years ago, I decided I'd like to know what I was eating. And so I went through and I memorized how many calories and how many grams of protein and approximate of fat were in the various common foods. So I can look at a plate and I can pretty well say how many calories, or plus or minus maybe 100, 150, and approximately how much protein and maybe how much fat. But most people can't do that. And now those students graduate with masters and PhDs in nutrition, and they don't know what's on a plate because the computer isn't there to tell them what a serving of this contains. The computer has the memory. The student doesn't have it. So now come back. Why do you put as much food on the plate as you do? Why don't you put more? Why don't you put less? Well, you say the plate is this size, and so I fill it up. Well, if you had a double-sized plate, would you still fill it up? And if you had a little smaller size plate, would you overflow it? You still come back. Why do you put as much food on your plate as you do? And I asked this question of myself many years ago. I'd come home. We used to have our main meal in the middle of the day, and only lived a mile from where I worked, and so I came in and my wife was serving out. There were just the two of us. And I don't know, it just didn't seem she put enough on the plate. And I said, isn't there enough food? And she says, why'd you ask? I said, well, you haven't put very much on there. Now, I hadn't evaluated the caloric density of that food. I was accustomed to seeing so much food on my plate, regardless if it was high or low in calories had to have so much food. And I think that's what all of you do. And then I began to think back, and I watched people and did some reading, and I think it starts very early in life. Jane and John, or Jane or John, I don't mind which way it goes, just picking out two names. It's meal time. It's dinner time. So mother puts so much food on the plate. And Jane or John or both sit down to eat. And after a while you look at, we'll say Jane, and her lower mandible isn't moving. Took a mouthful 3 minutes before and it's still in her mouth. And mother says, eat your food. And the mandible begins to go up and down. And in a little while, maybe another mouthful, spoonful goes in, and then the mandible comes to rest. And mother looks over there and says, look, if you don't eat that food, you're not going to get your dessert. And so the mandible begins to go up and down a few times, and another spoonful goes in, and then it slows down and stops again. And the mother looks over there and says, look, I told you, if you don't eat your food, you're not going to get your dessert. And by the way, if you don't eat your food, you're not going to play with John across the road. And so the mandible begins to go up and down again. And it may or may not, the food may or may not get finished. But usually it does. And this happens repeatedly. Now, how did mother know how much food to put on that plate? She didn't do any nutritional analysis. It was a completely arbitrary decision on her part. All right, they now get over the stage of having mother put the food on the plate. And now they want to serve themselves. And so their eyes are bigger than the stomach and the food is filled on the plate. And mother says, you put that on the food, you better eat it. I'm not going to give you an allowance if you don't finish your food. We can't afford to give good food and have it wasted. You eat that meal. You put it on the plate. And most of people in this country are brought up to eat more than they need. The habit is set. And it's set very early in life. Now you say, well, what did you do with your kids? Well, the Lord knew best, I think, and we were married for 10 years before our first child arrived, and during that time we had matured a bit. And my wife and I, fortunately, we don't agree on every point, but when it comes to the children, we make a decision, and if mother says something, I back her up, and then maybe later on we have it out. But in front of the children, we support one another. And I think that's a wise thing to do. But you better have it discussed before so that you don't have to have it out later. And we had a very simple solution to this problem that we have seen in many a home. As I have traveled the world, and I've eaten with many, many people in different parts of the world, and I see this repeated over and over again. Mealtime is a time of duress under which children are forced to eat quantities of food that they don't want to eat. I'm not talking about kinds of food and quality. That's a different situation. I'm talking about quantity. When our children were small and we helped them, we did what every other parents do. We estimated how much they should eat. And as soon as they said, I'm through, I don't want to eat anymore, you're excused. Well, can I have my dessert at the next meal? Go play. And that became a routine. As soon as a child said, I don't want to eat anymore, you can be excused. And if they hadn't had dessert, it was kept for them. And they knew that. They didn't worry about it. They went out to play. 2 hours later, Mommy, I'm so hungry. Oh, you are? Why don't you have a drink of water? Oh, but I'd like to. Can't I eat this apple or an orange or banana? Can't you give me a sandwich? No, you can have that at the next meal. You go have a drink of water and go play. And if the parents are strong, it only takes saying that twice. It becomes a routine. When they get hungry, they go drink a glass of water. The next meal, they look at food as if they haven't seen it for a year. And they enjoy the food. Now, when they serve, and they, now this is when we serve, any food that they don't eat, they never see again if we have served it. If they say they've had enough, that's finished. There's no argument, no coaxing. Don't play, well, you better, I think you should eat a little more. There's no coaxing. When they decide, even if it, we know they're going to be hungry because they want to play with the neighbor kid, that's fine. This is part of life. They've got to learn some lessons. So as soon as they say, I'm through, they're through. And they never see that food again if daddy or mother has served it. But now the time comes when they're of age. They want to serve it. And they have put on usually much more than they can eat. And we don't say a word. And when they've got through a part of it, it's obvious they're not going to finish it, and they say, well, I can't eat it. That's all right. You're excused. And off they go to play. And when they come back for the next meal, the food, just as they left it, is waiting for them. It isn't heated. It's been, if it's in summer, it's been kept in the refrigerator, and mother brings it out to bring it back to room temperature, but it awaits them with the spoon and the fork just where they left it. And everybody else eats what is prepared for that meal. And they say, well, can't I have some of that? Well, you remember, you put that on your plate. When that's finished, if you want some of this, it'll be available. You only do that once or twice, and it never happens again. And I have seen my daughter standing by my son when he was serving himself. Say, well, remember, Fred, don't put so much. You can come back again, but don't put so much. And children learn to eat what they need because their hunger will tell them the next meal how much they should eat, and they learn not to waste food. I have seen my son go back 5 helpings. But he looks at that helping and he meditates, do you think I can finish it? Because if he doesn't, he faces it the next meal. Now, why do we eat the amount of food we do? I've given you some idea here, but we haven't really come down to it. And I won't take time to write it on the board, because maybe if one of you have good writing, you can write it while I say it. There are 3 good reasons which I think sort of determine the amount of food, the pattern that we set for our eating. The first is visual satisfaction. Visual satisfaction. You see so much food on the plate and you see it vanish down your gullet and you get satisfied. I've had a good square meal. But you know, while you're having visual satisfaction, your stomach is getting a volume of food significantly greater than what you put on your plate. Because you're mixing every mouthful with saliva. So that the volume in your stomach is larger than the amount of food you put on your plate. And when I watch some people and see how much food they put on their plate, I do some mental calculations and I say they've got a pretty good sized stomach. Because all that food plus all that saliva is in making a pretty substantial load. And then you also get the third, well, because of that volume in your food, you get the second satisfaction, and that is gastric satisfaction. Your stomach adjusts to accommodate that volume of food. Because we are people of habit, and we tend to put the same amount of food approximately on our plates day after day. And I've watched people. If they're accustomed to having a second serving, most people don't put as much on their plate the second time around as they did the first. But the total amount gives them quotes, gastric satisfaction, close quotes, that makes them comfortable. And while they are seeing the food disappear, and while the stomach is getting satisfied with the quantity of food in it, our minds have psychic satisfaction. If the food smelt and tasted good, and it looked attractive, and the environment was congenial, you're not quarreling with your spouse or the children, you're listening to music, or you're taking friends out to a restaurant, or they're over and eating with you, that gives you psychic satisfaction. And these three components, visual satisfaction, gastric satisfaction, and psychic satisfaction, all go in to the amount of food you consume. Because as you all know, while you are eating 99.999%, you're not thinking of whether the proteins are complete or incomplete, or whether the fats are saturated or unsaturated, or whether there's enough dietary fiber or not. I hope you're not when you're eating. Now, what happens? Because of what happens from babyhood up, most people in this country tend to learn to eat too much. They get their gastric satisfaction when they have gone beyond their caloric requirements. It starts almost from the time the baby is born, or at least when they come off the mother's milk, mother's breast. You know, bottles are used as silencers. If a baby cries, stick a bottle in his mouth, especially if they're at church. I don't think you should keep stuffing either juices or milk down a baby's throat. Sometimes it's crying because it's got colic, because you've already put too much in its stomach. Don't use that technique. It's not a good technique. Say, well, what about a pacifier? Well, that's a different story. So we eat too much and we suffer for it. There are hundreds of thousands of people who are carrying around too much weight because they have never learned to eat the quantity of food that they need. They eat too much. And maybe it was their parents and grandparents are responsible. Sometimes, of course, it may be their responsibility. You know, there are many, many people who are thin because they eat too much. You say, well, now that's not possible. There are occasional people in this country who are thin because they don't eat enough. But the majority of thin people in this country overeat. And so when someone comes to me and says, you know, my problem isn't overweight, it's underweight, I'd like to gain weight. Do you have any suggestions? And I ask them, well, what kind of appetite do you have? And if their spouse is there, he says, he just eats enormous amounts. And I said, do you? And he said, yeah, I do. And I say, well, why don't you eat less? Well, I don't want to lose weight. I said, I know. I know you don't want to lose weight, but why don't you eat less? And I have to sell them on that point. I said, give it a try. You see, if we overload our digestive system, it is inefficient in the digestion and assimilation of that food. And many thin people eat so much and they lack, their intestinal tracts lack the ability to handle that massive amount of food. And so when they cut it down, their stomachs, their gastrointestinal tract works more efficiently and they begin to gain more than that they were before. Now, if they keep losing weight and you cut their food, that's a different thing. But I've rarely found that to happen. Now, I tell obese people, when they come and they're obviously eating more than what they need, and I tell them, why don't you eat less? And I try to sell them on the quantity of food. Now, again, I'm saying I'm not talking about quality and kinds of food, just quantity. Eat a smaller quantity. And then I give them a warning. I said, if you strictly and honestly eat a smaller quantity, you may gain weight. No, I don't want to gain weight. I said, I know. But you see, you are also overloading your system. But your system has a greater capacity than the fellow who is thin because he overloads it. You are assimilating more than you need, but you are still overloading it. Not every obese person, but many of them. And as soon as they cut down their food, the food that they now are eating is handled more efficiently and they will gain weight. So I warned them in advance. But I said, you stay with the program and we'll keep cutting it till you do lose weight. And if they are faithful and honest about it, they will lose weight. Now, a very interesting study was done some years ago by the Department of Agriculture in Ohio. They took three sows, and each one had piglets. And they divided the piglets in two groups, but they were the same number of piglets from each of the sows in each group. One group of piglets got all the food that they could wanted to eat, and that was before them, food was before them 24 hours a day. They never ran short of food. Anytime that piglet wanted to move over and eat some out of the trough, it was there. The other group, they only gave the calculated amount from previous experiments as to the food that those growing animals needed. When the market time came for the sale of those pigs, the pigs that had had all the food that they could eat or wanted to eat and did eat had eaten one-third more food than the others and weighed 150 pounds less per pig than did the others. So you see, they turned to the farmer and said, look, you can save money, you only have to feed them one-third less and they'll weigh 150 pounds more. Well, you couldn't beat that, could you? And they call this the inefficient use of calories. Those pigs had just got used to eating food and the stomach couldn't, the digestive tract couldn't handle it, and it just was discarded. And because of the overload, they didn't do as well, they didn't grow as well. Now humans are just that way. There are some people from babyhood up, they have been so stuffed with food, they eat large quantities and they don't get what they should out of it. And this is why I say I've seen it over and over again. I remember years ago my secretary, she said, my husband and I would like to come and talk to you. And I'd like him to be here. And so I said, all right, let's meet this evening at 7 o'clock. And so I went back to my office. And both of them came, and she says, it's my husband's problem. He's overweight. And he was overweight. And he turned to me and he says, I eat less food than my wife does, and I'm the one who's overweight. And she was on the thin side. So I talked to him a while, and I said, well, why don't you try to eat a little less? Oh, he says, I don't want to... He agreed. He was the one who was overweight. I said, why don't you eat less? So he agreed. And when I thought it was through, she spoke up. And she says, tell me, how can I gain weight? And of course, by this time, I knew how much she was eating. He was obese, but she ate even more than he did. And I said, eat less. But she said, I want to gain weight. I said, exactly so. You're so overloading your system. Why don't you give it a try and eat less? And she sat there and she looked at me for a long time. I knew that her neurons were spinning. And she said, I think I'll stay thin. I like to eat food. So you see, each one of us, it comes down to the thing that we as adults must determine how much food we eat. And we must eat at regular intervals. I think no one should leave this room without making a commitment to the Lord that with His strength he won't eat between meals. And then at mealtime, learn to eat the minimum amount of food, the minimum, that will keep you in your desirable weight. You can go down if you get below your desirable weight, back up. Now, I have no tables of height and weight in my office. I have it in my folder, in the file cabinet, but I never use it. When people come to me and say, you know, I'd like to lose weight, I don't pull out how tall are you and so on and so forth figure. I ask them a very simple question. How much do you weigh when you look and feel the best? And everyone can tell you, they know when they look and feel the best. And here's someone who weighs 170 pounds and they say, well, I think I should weigh 135 pounds. I said, okay, that's the target. Let's work to that. They decide it. I don't decide it. And the chart doesn't decide it. You give them a chart and they go away saying, well, maybe I'm broad-shouldered. He told me I was narrow-shouldered. No, no, I'm broad-shouldered. And all sorts of excuses. Maybe that doesn't fit me. They set their own target. And it works like a charm. And they know what the target should be, better than the charts do. Because some people at a certain weight may not look as comfortable. They may need a little more weight to look nice. And you know, there's a verse in Isaiah, the 55th chapter. It says, what is that one? Why spend your money for that which is not bread, and your labor for that which satisfieth not? Eat ye that which is good, and what is the last sentence? And let your soul delight in fatness. The Lord doesn't want us to look haggard. People are, what's wrong with you? You lost weight. You don't look well. The Lord doesn't want us to be fat. But He doesn't want us to be thin either. He wants us to be clothed so that we look and feel good. And that's the target that we should aim at. When I was a boy growing up in the foothills of the Himalaya Mountains in India, I didn't grow fast till I was 16. My brother Leslie, who spoke to you folks here last year, he grew earlier. He had his rapid growth rate earlier. And so you see here was Mervyn not growing very fast and Leslie growing very rapidly. Although he was older, he had it earlier and I was having it late. And we lived active lives. Our legs took us wherever we needed to go. We'd go to school in the morning. Well, it was a mile and a quarter and about almost 1,000 feet higher than we were. So it was uphill going to school. We'd take a lunch. School would give out at 3:30. We'd run home, change our clothes, and go back to play some games. Soccer, field hockey, whatever it was. We'd play for about an hour and a half, and we were day boys and the others were boarding students, and then they would go and we'd run home. So we'd been up and back and played there, and it would be supper time. And I remember my mother chiding me and saying, Mervyn, you're a finicky eater. And I'd say, Mother, I've eaten 5 toasts. She says, yes, but Leslie ate 14. So I was a finicky eater. But as I look back, I wasn't growing like he was. We both were physically active, but he was physically active and growing, and I was not growing at that time. But then when I entered my 16th year, we used to have to stand according to height when they had lessons to recite and so forth, and I was third from the bottom. 9 months later, I was third from the top. I grew 1 inch a month. And I not only outgrew my clothes, but I outgrew all the food my mother could give me. And when I went to England, I had a voracious appetite. I was probably the most physically active student on the campus. For reasons I can't tell you, I enjoyed running. And every morning I got up at 4 o'clock. I'd study for an hour and a half. At 5:30, I'd put on some old clothes. Maybe raining, it may be snowing, depending on the time of year. I'd run 3 miles. I'd come back, I'd get ready for worship. We'd have worship, we'd have breakfast, and I was ready for school. And I'd go to school, my last class would give out about 3:30, and I'd go to the gym. And there were no English boys in the gym. English boys didn't run, they didn't exercise. But the European people who had come over, young people who had come over from Europe, from Austria, from Italy, from Spain, from France, from Germany, from the Scandinavian countries, there was a movement through Europe of keeping fit, getting the young people fit. And they filled the gymnasium. They'd come over to learn English, and I learned all types of calisthenics and exercises from them and enjoyed it. And I did that for about an hour and a half. Then I'd go back and we'd have supper and then we'd study and I'd have my worship. I'd be ready to go to sleep when the lights went off at 10. And then I'd do 20 minutes of calisthenics. I'd do about 50 push-ups, the English type, not the American type. And the English push-up takes more effort. And after 20 minutes, I'd roll into bed and sleep till my alarm went off at 4. And on Sundays, there was another boy and I, and we'd go canvassing. And we didn't like to ride in the van that the school had because we'd like to pick our own places. And we'd pick a place 50 or 60 miles away. We'd cycle there, canvass all day, and cycle back. And I could eat. I had a voracious appetite, and I got a nickname. I was the barrel without the bottom. And we didn't go through a cafeteria line, we were served. And if there was any extra food, they always knew which table to bring it to. They always bring it to Harding's table. And I was hungry all the time. I didn't gain weight, I was about like I am now. And I remember one day, it was the last year Les was there, he wasn't as active as I was. And he didn't eat as much as I did at that time. We looked out the window, we roomed together, and here was the bakery van. And we went down and bought a loaf of bread, and both of us ate it, and then went and had supper. And one day I was studying in the library. I was writing a paper. And here I came across a statement that a Greek philosopher had written hundreds of years before. He that is not master of his appetite is not master of himself. He that is not master of his appetite is not master of himself. And I said, I'm not master of my appetite. And through the grace of God, from that day to this, I have never eaten between meals. And I began to cut down on my food intake. I'd never heard about the spirit of prophecy and those counsels. But God used this writing of a Greek philosopher to set me on the right track. And I'm thankful for it. Now I'd like to ask you the question, what's the difference between appetite and hunger? Are they synonyms? What functions do each play? Well, let's start with hunger. This morning, some of you saw the contraction of that stomach, that wave of contraction that almost seemed to cut the stomach in two. Well, when a person gets really hungry, they get hunger contractions. That's what the physiologists call them. And it may hurt. The muscles are contracting so forcefully that you get pain in your stomach. Most of us have never experienced true hunger. When we say we're dying of hunger, we could live another 3 weeks without eating anything. But true hunger, when true hunger comes, it doesn't ask the question, what is there to eat? There's no question about what. It's, is there something to eat? And as I have studied and observed as I've traveled outside of this country, where people are starving, where they have, if they're lucky to get even a part of a meal a day, or may have food once every 2 or 3 days, are they not interested in what? They're interested in food. Hunger doesn't ask that question. Now, it's interesting that hunger is easily satisfied. If we all ate only to satisfy hunger, we'd all be underfed. And that's why God has given us the function of appetite. Appetite says, what, which shall I eat, and how much? Appetite is selective. And I think Ellen White was very wise. God gave her the wisdom. She said, when you set a table, put all the foods there before you. What was she telling us then to do? Estimate the total quantity we were going to eat. Rather than saying we'll eat this part now, and then later when you're not expecting it, here comes a dessert. And immediately you've eaten more food than you should. So the food is before you. Or what my wife and I do, she does it. She tells the people, we'll put the food on the table, we'll ask the blessing, and then as people are serving themselves, we'd just like to tell you, save room for a dessert. We give them that warning. We never pop a dessert on people. It's either there that they can see it, or we tell them that it's there. You see, appetite has us continue to eat after our hunger has been satisfied. And God has left us responsible for the end point. This is one of the great tests that God has given us. And Adam and Eve failed on this very test. We don't have a forbidden tree, but we have the responsibility to say no more. See, that's the same test. We are told we should not overeat. Then if we overeat, it's disobedience. And it was on disobedience that Adam and Eve fell. And Ellen White says that Christ, in his wilderness fasting, went through all the rigors of hunger, true hunger, and got the victory over appetite so that he could be our justification. The question comes so many times as to how do I gain that victory over appetite? And I think you have to go back and start from the first part of your meal. Don't overload your plate. Underserve yourself, underserve your family. Not that the food isn't available. And if after you have eaten that much, you feel really that you need a little more, then take a small extra helping. You know, potlucks, I think, are difficult situations. You have a large variety of foods, generally speaking, unless it's an organized potluck and they bring salads and this and that, and it's the sameness. But when it's a real potluck and everybody brings whatever they want to, I watch people go through. And sometimes it's enormous quantities of food. And I know they're inactive, and sometimes they show by their body build that they have been doing this for many years. Underserve yourself. And then if you need, take more. If you're not eating enough, just take a little bit more till you gain that weight which is your target weight, where you look and feel the best under your working conditions. I remember a person that had tried, I don't know how many times, and failed to control their weight and their appetite. It was really the control of appetite. There was nothing wrong with the food they ate. It was just that they ate too much. And I turned to this person one day and I said, you know, you've asked me so many times. Or it was a relative of mine. They'd ask Margaret. They'd say, will you ask Mervyn to help me? And I had tried different ways. And this particular day, Margaret brought it up, and I said, I understand you want to lose weight. And he said, yes, I've tried before, but it doesn't work. And I said, now let me ask you a question. Do you ever stop eating? Oh, yes. I said, now you don't eat between meals. No, I don't eat between meals. So then you do stop eating at least 3 times a day. That's right. I said, since you have to stop, why don't you stop a little earlier? Don't keep eating until you recognize you've overdone. Why don't you stop a little earlier? You have to stop sometime. And you know, that's helped a lot of people. Remember, you can't keep on eating. You've got to stop sometime. There are people who have 1 meal a day. It starts in the morning when they wake up and it ends when they go to sleep. But that's unusual, see. Most people stop 3 times a day, and then even if they eat between meals, they'll eat and stop. Well, why not stop? And I'd like to give one more example here. I had a call from a dentist. He practiced in Redlands, California, not very far from Loma Linda. And he says, you know, I'd like to talk to you. I have a personal problem. And he didn't tell me his problem. I said, well, I'm here till 5:30. Oh, he said, but I can't get there at that time. Would you be willing to see me in the evening? I said, all right, come on back. I'll meet you at 7 o'clock. And he knew where my office was. And so at 7 o'clock, he came in. And he walked in and he sat down and he says, you know, I'm a bit podgy. And he held some rolls of fat. But he handled it fairly well. He didn't bulge. And I said, well, tell me what you eat. Oh, he says, I have a good diet. My wife is a home economist. She fixes good food. There's nothing wrong with the diet. I said, do you eat between meals? Well, he said, that could be the problem. I said, what do you eat? Oh, he says, I like chocolate. I said, well, what did you have this morning for in-between meals? Oh, he says, I had 2 candy bars. Well, in those days, each candy bar, the miserable things that I see on the shelves today, these were real candy bars in those days. They had 250 calories per candy bar. And he had had 2 for at about 10 o'clock in the morning. I said, did you have something in the afternoon? Yes. He said, I had more of the same. I said, 2? Yes. So that made 1,000 calories, see, and at 500 in the morning and 500 in the afternoon. I said, before you go to bed, do you have a snack? Oh, no, no. He says, once we finish dinner, we have our big meal in the evening, and once we finish that, I don't eat anymore. But he says, while my wife is fixing that meal, I nibble a little. I said, well, what did you nibble a little this evening? He says, a package of chocolate chips. I said, what size? He says, well, it's the regular size. I said, a pound of chocolate chips? He said, yes. I said, did you eat them all? He says, every one. So I turned to my bookshelf and I pulled out a food composition table, and at the back of it, it has the food calories in pounds. And we found chocolate chips, 1 pound, and he was watching, 2,600 calories. And he looked at me and he says, 2,600 calories? 500 calories and another 500? He says, that's 3,600 calories? He says, that's probably more than I got from the rest of my food. I said, it probably is. And he stood there. He was sort of in a daze. And then he suddenly perked up and he says, I know what my problem is. Thank you very much. Good night. And he was gone. And I watched that man, and he's been slim and trim ever since. You see, sometimes we don't realize how much we're eating. He didn't realize how much he was eating between meals. And many other people don't realize that. And I think through the grace of God, that man learned to control his appetite. And that's what all of us have to do through the grace of God. Appetite allows us to really savor and enjoy our food. When we're hungry, we don't enjoy food as much. But once that hunger, which is easily satisfied, is past, then we come into the period of appetite, which requires us, it allows us to and encourages us really to eat a little more. But then God has given you and me the responsibility of saying, this is where I stop. And I would recommend to each one of you that you start by not over but under serving yourself. And if you have to go back, fine. If you don't have to go back and you're overweight, wait till your weight comes down to the amount that you want to weigh when you look and feel the best. If you read the Bible, there are many, many experiences recorded there regarding appetite. The New Testament has it, the Old Testament has it, and Ellen White has much to say about it. I won't read many statements there, but you know what Solomon said? What does he say about a glutton? It would be better for him to do what? Cut his throat. That's rather a strong statement. And Ellen White encourages us over and over again. And I would encourage you to read her writings and ask God to give you the victory if you are the one who are eating more than what you need. Shall we pray? Heavenly Father, once again this evening, as we thy children kneel before thee, we are so grateful that Jesus came and suffered in the wilderness and gained the victory, that we through his grace might also gain a victory in our own lives. Thou knowest each one of us in our individual weaknesses, and we ask, as thou hast promised, that thou wilt give us strength sufficient to overcome any and all temptations. Bless each one here and help us to learn only to eat of the right food in the right amount at the right time. And may thy blessing be upon one and all, is our prayer in Jesus' name. Amen.
This has been another classic sermon from the Archive of American Christian Ministries. This recording has been digitally reprocessed from the original audio cassette or reel-to-reel in order to make this CD available. The audio quality was improved as much as possible. International copyright, American Christian Ministries. All rights reserved. To order a copy of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 800-233-4450. International calls dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.americanchristianministries.org. There you will discover the largest selection of authentic Adventist preaching available. You can trust ACM. There's no compromise here. If American Christian Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? We'll share it with our speakers and volunteer workers to encourage them. Your prayers and continued financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He's coming soon.